We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
Yeah! NBA Strayer! How are you going? Are you well? I hope so. This is NBA Strayer. It is Monday, October 12th. And for the 500th odd time... That's right, episode 500! Off you go! Woo! Loving it! I'm your host, James Clements. I'm a writer sometimes... Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, and literally whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet folding stuff. And I'm here in Larry Armour Studios to give you the lowdown on who did what, why they did it, and who did it better than Lonzo Ball in the Orlando bubble. Breakdown, wrapping up every little bit of NBA action for you for the last time this season while repping Strayer a little bit. Because... not only is it our 500th episode and we have a super secret special guest, but it's the end of the NBA season. It took a year. Holy shit, October 12th. Go back to 2019. That's right. The Los Angeles Lakers of Los Angeles, California are your 2019-20 champions. Remember 2019? Jesus. That was about 8 years ago. Anyway, end of the NBA season. We're going to fang through a wrap of the blowout of Game 6, LeBron's fourth title. Have some thoughts. We'll do some really, really, really quick weekend winners and losers, or at least finals winners and losers. And then we'll go to the first part of my chat with our super secret special guest, Aussie legend, Shane the Hammer Heel. Yes, we've got the hammer on. It's an unreal chat with Hammer. We talk about the Boomers trying to fight Charles Barkley, talking shit to Gary Payton, his time in the NBA with the Wolves and with the Spurs, loads more. There's a whole bunch of NBL stuff as well in the second half, some Europe stuff. It's just really, really awesome, wide-ranging, fun chat with a bloke who's seen and done a lot for Australian basketball and around the world. So I really, really love talking to Hammer. It was great. So you're going to enjoy that. But for the foreseeable future, this is going to be the last time we do the usual dumbassery. That's a knife. Old mate, no mate, spud of the night, pantsing the evening, better than Lonzo Ball. Because we're not going to have any games to wrap until Adam Silver and his mates start a new season. Who knows when that could be? So, but we're also going to have some yeah-nahs, some really quick ones today, unpopular opinion of the day, and an Outback Takehouse or two where we're serving up a couple of flame grilled takes. Because it's Monday, a really quick dickhead of the week, and of course, a Grey Mamba Award for Outstanding Achievement in the Field of Excellence and a Shane Heel Shoot a Shoot, Shoot a Shot, Light Him Up Award, as introed by Shane the Hammer Heel. Plus, we'll wrap up all the picks we had, which is awesome. And that's brought to you by playapp.com.au. All of the finals picks, we'll finish them off. And close out with a new Delhi review. All right. 500 episodes. Can you believe it? I bloody well can't. I haven't stuck with 500 anything. This is unreal. Big show. Fun show. Shane the Hammer Heel. NBA Finals, end of the season. This is NBA Strayer episode 500. Let's go.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Strayer.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
You better. I mean, you better watch out for LeBron James and his attack if you're the Miami Heat. Or you better watch out for the attack of, I don't know, 3 months of being in the bubble, a bit of fatigue, and having played your Game 7 and Game 5. Isn't that right? You better watch out for the LeBron attack if you're some of the media members as well. Give me my damn respect, he says. I just want my damn respect. Can't get no respect out here, tell you what. All right. Your Los Angeles Lakers of Los Angeles, California are your 2020 NBA champions. which is some fascinating stuff, isn't it? What a great, great win that was today over the Heaters. LeBron and Danny Green, they're out there. Three titles and three different teams. First blokes to do that since Robert Horry and John Sally. Only players in NBA history to do it. Pretty bloody good. And LeBron becomes the first bloke to win finals MVP on three different teams. So, pretty good scenes. If you're a Lakers fan, of course, what I am definitely not. What do you reckon? Should we just fang through the wrap of today's game? Because, look, it wasn't much chop, was it? So let's do it. Game wrap, game wrap, game wrap, game wrap, game wrap. The final bubble wrap for the foreseeable future. We might get hub wraps, I reckon, next year. If the NBA is smart, they'll take a leaf out of the Australian AFL book. Have some hubs scattered around the country in places that are at least getting Corona under control. In Australia, every bit, fucking Victoria smashed it, so there you go. Anyway, look, Game 6, Lakers at Heat. That's right, the Lakers beat the Heat on their own floor. 106-93, just an awesome display by the Lakers. Not even that close in the end. This was a blow. It got up to 36 points. Absolutely crazy. Just an awesome display by the Lakers. They came out laser focused. And look, the Heat put up a bit of a fight, but they were down 8 after the first quarter as well. And the Lakers shut down, I feel like, everything the Heat wanted to do. I think there was a point where the commentators, the old JVG, Mark Jackson, Mike Breen, when they're not out there shit-talking, there was a good point when they brought up the idea of, like, every time that a Heat shooter turned a corner, there was a Laker there forcing them to either make a pass they probably didn't want to make or really just sort of cut them off from really going to the rim. And the Heat sort of got stuck in between the two worlds. And they couldn't really respond, the Heat. The threes weren't dropping. They'd emptied the clip very clearly in Game 5. Couldn't hit threes. No easy baskets. Too many turnovers. Zero transition buckets. And they just kept fucking missing free throws as well, which was crazy. 5 of 14 at one point. 12 of 21. And you're like, all right, they've hit some. And they end up basically 13 of 22. Big problem. Jimmy Butler just couldn't get to the line. He goes 1 of 3. And if he's not getting to the line, what, 12 times in this game? The Heat have no chance in it, and that's exactly what happened. Look, this was done by the half. They outscored them by 20 in the second quarter, did the Lakers. AD, he was doing just really, really, really tough work in the first and second quarters, and LeBron was just filling in the gaps. He did have KCP doing some stuff. Danny Green hit a couple of threes, and away they went. But really, tell you what, a lot of this has got to come down to Rondo, doesn't it? Because he was just out there. He didn't miss any of his first 5 or 6 shots. Every time that the Lakers were sort of like, ah, fuck, we need a quick injection of offense. And they look at Kuzma and he's like, don't give the ball to me. Rondo's like, I'll fucking do it then. And he was incredible. So that was awesome. Good to see from Rondo. But the poor Heat just, as mentioned, emptied the clip in Game 5. Running on empty in this one. No gas left in the tank. Butts was just Dunskies. Yeah, 12.7 rebounds, 8 assists, but it only came on 10 shots. 5 of 10 shooting in a closeout game from Butler. And you can't really fault him. He's the only reason they got this far. So it's tough. Bam was pretty good. 25 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 blocks. You look at that stat line and go, wow, Bam had a great game. And then you sort of think about it a little bit more and go, wait, hang on a second. At what point did he score all these points? And you're like, oh. Yeah, not really when it mattered. I feel like he came out of the first half. You're like, ooh, Bam is struggling. And he had 5 points in the first half, has 20 in the second half when it's pretty much just extended garbage time, right? So, look, good on you, Bam. But his impact was negligible, I want to say, in the first half. Kind of kept getting put in the wrong position, kept finding himself isolated against AD and not having anything to do. His dribble handoffs, they were just kind of like going nowhere because those, as mentioned, those Heat shooters, they'd turn a corner, they'd either go towards the basket and be looking to pass rather than score, and they just needed some buckets and they didn't get them. So Bam, good stat line, not a great game. Duncan Robinson, look, ends up with 10 points. Pretty good game, got started early and then just disappeared again. The shot just completely abandoned him. He had 6 in the first quarter. hit a couple of threes, and then just nothing much really going the rest of the way. 3-7 from downtown. I feel like we need Duncan Robinson in this game to take probably 12 threes, try to hit 7 of them like he did in game 5. It's just a tough scene. Tyler Hero, speaking of tough scenes, 7 points on 10 shots for the rookie. 1-2 from 3. He did go through the entire Celtics series in the Eastern Conference Finals, basically putting up 7 threes a game. Didn't come close to touching that in the finals. And you kind of wonder about that. Jay Crowder, it's a slap in the face to the integrity of basketball. We don't talk about him more. Isn't that right, Draymond?
Yeah, we need to talk about his 12 points on 9 shots and 1-5 from 3. Way more.
Yeah, we also need to talk about how he continuously got fucking bodied by his old teammate LeBron, but also by like AD, KCP, Markieff Morris, literally anyone who lined him up. Jay Crowder got 4 rebounds, 4 fouls for Crowder. LeBron just fucking nailed him in the face with an elbow early on too, at the end of the first quarter. Kendrick Lamar Nunn chucked in 8 points on 8 shots, but nothing going really there. Olynyk had 15 minutes of garbage time as well. The Hoser, the big Canadian, 9.7 rebounds. Iggy was very ineffective. 2 of the threes that he took, like, they might have cracked the glass in my house, as opposed to, like, you know, going in. That's how badly you missed him. Like, the shockwave from how hard he hit the fucking backboard. Reverberations around the world, I'll tell you. And Goran Dragic, the big Slovenian, the little Slovenian, good on him. Got up for this game, played, gritted through it, and good on him for having the hat the size of Farlap. Unfortunately, didn't add a giant amount to the Heat. 2 of 8 shooting. 0 of 4 from 3. The first one that he took made you want to gouge out your eyes. You're like, oh, jeez. So that's what it looks like when you haven't played basketball for about a week and a half and you're asked to step right into the NBA Finals. Christ. But yeah, so not a giant amount from the Heat up and down the roster. They got 3 points off the bench, I think, early on. And I feel like they had essentially like maybe, 7 points in the first half from their bench dudes. So Iggy, Dragon, Kendrick Lamar, Nunn. It just wasn't enough, especially with Butts not being able to hit his shot, Crowder not being able to do anything either. And Butler just not going hammer and tongs. Meanwhile, LeBron's just doing work, crushing it. So the Lakers, meanwhile, that first half was an absolute clinic, wasn't it? They shot 54%. They locked them down defensively. And you just felt pretty tough. Like, for the Heat, they had 36 points at the half in a finals game. Ugh. And they were down basically, 28. It was fucked. Second largest deficit in finals history. And you got to come back from that. But a lot of that was to do, 9 turnovers for the Heat in the first half as well. Lakers, look, they're shooting sort of, dip below the 54% point in the second half, but they did go 11 of 35 from 3, meaning I think they only lost one game this playoff run where they shot they shot better than 30%, so they lost one game where they shot better than 30% as a team all playoffs. 12 turnovers in total for the Lakers. Great game. They were just awesome. I mean, what can you say? LeBron had 28 and 14 and 10, wins finals MVP, absolute gun of a game, 13 of 20 shooting. He was remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. AD had 19 points, 15 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks, but defensively was just fucking everywhere. Absolutely everywhere, causing havoc. He shot 7 of 17, 0 of 3 from downtown, but it didn't matter because they had contributors up and down the roster. I mean, Rondo, as mentioned, 19 points, 8 of 11 shooting, but also turned into Rajon Allen Rondo. 3 of 4 from downtown, 8 of 11. Unbelievable game for him. 19-4-4, and pretty good. The notorious KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, made me a lot of money this finals run with the over-under bets on his 3-point shot. 17 points, 2 of 7 from downtown, 6 of 13 overall. He was exactly what they needed in this one. And all the way through these finals, Danny Not the Boxer Green was also good. Good bounce back, 4 of 10 shooting, 3 of 7 from downtown for him. And for all the fuck knuckles out there losing their shit on Twitter for him missing that shot last game, I mean, what sort of like amount of fucked in the head do you have to be to send death threats to a bloke because he missed a shot in a game when you turn around and kick the crap out of the team next game anyway? You've got to be fucked in the head. What are you doing? Kuzma, he was shit house. 2 points, one rebound, 0 of 2 from downtown. Thanks, Kuz. Keith, he was amazing. He had a massive, awesome corner shot. Absolute swish bomb. And then missed the exact same shot on the next possession and never shot it again. That was pretty great. 3 points, 2 rebounds for him. Caruso, he got promoted to the starting lineup in place of Dwight the Flog Howard. 19, look, his run, 33 minutes, 2 of 7 shooting. It was a plus 20. I was going to say plus 19 because that's what I had written down, but they changed it, plus 20. 4 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, 1 steal and a block. Caruso put on a Caruso show. I love it. Dwight Howard got out there, hit a 3 because he's a fuckhead. Quinn Cook got out there for that last minute, and so did Jared Dudley, which was lovely, but they both missed their shots, whereas Dwight hit theirs. So, the Lakers win again after leading after 3, 57 and zip this season, pretty good. And the Lakers win the finals 4-2 in a blowout, absolute smashing. Defensively, they were absolute fucking titans in this game. The Heat couldn't do shit, and the Lakers ride that to their 12th win in LA, and what is it, their 17th franchise title. Pretty bloody good. So with that in mind, let's absolutely fly through some weekend winners and losers, because I think we're going to do some season winners and losers in our next show. So let's do that.
Oh my God. I won! I won! Ah! Recapping our day's top story, the winner of today's state lottery is me, Kent Brockman.
Can we get a shot of me? There you go. All right, weekend winners and losers, or at least finals winners. LeBron James is a finals winner.
Oh, really, Jimmy? Well spotted. Fuck you. 4 titles.
But the best part is 4 finals MVPs, 4 titles. LeBron is now, and was always going to be, at least the second best basketball player ever. And in terms of just solidifying a unimpeachable legacy, like, this goes a very long way to it. 4 is more than 3. He's 1 behind Kobe, 2 behind MJ. Don't forget about Kareem. Don't forget about Billy Russell. But, man, goes to LA, goes into the bubble, wins a title. That's what LeBron James does. What is it, 4 out of 10 trips? Not a bad winning percentage when it comes to NBA titles, I reckon. 100% is better, but I'll talk about that later real quick. AD's obviously a finals winner, wins a title in his first year with the LeBron. And you now get the feeling like this could be, don't forget Golden State will be back next year, but AD and LeBron, and if they can add some other interesting pieces around that, you feel like it's a pretty fucking terrifying contender for a little while at least, right? So good job, AD. Proves the haters, the doubters. I don't know. There's not really any haters or doubters. Everyone's like, he's really good. Now he's on a better team. They win. What a surprise. There's no haters. There's no doubters. We all know he's fucking good. Now he gets to go, yeah, and I'm a title winner. Fuck off. Rajon Ray Allen Rondo is a finals winner. Show up massive when needed because he now, look, the playoff Rondo joke was a bit of a fucking, playoff Rondo. I remember when he was good sometimes in the playoffs. Oh, playoff Rondo. Now it's a fucking thing. That moniker is like deserved. First player since Clyde Levert to win a fucking title with the Celtics and the Lakers, but it's the first time anyone has done it since the Lakers have been in Los Angeles. It's the old Rick Fox. Even though Fox didn't ever win a title with the Celtics, which is pretty great. Rondo going to the team that he hates to play with a player that he hates and wins a ring. That's fucking awesome. Talk about a weekend winner and a finals winner. Good job, Rondo. J.R. Smith is a weekend finals winner because he never has to fucking wear a shirt again, does he? It was off before the game was over. That was fucking gross. I love J.R. Smith forever. Old Henny Smith. Frank Vogel. First year as coach of the Lakers, ignominious exit after a shit show in Orlando. Was obviously their second choice after Ty Lue and probably after Jason Kidd, to be honest. But now, Frank Vogel, championship coach. Pretty good. Finals winner, Dwight Howard. Fucking hate him. He's a fucking idiot, but he finally won a title in Orlando. Eric Spoelstra is a winner, isn't he? Yeah, but Jimmy, he lost. Yeah, look, he's got a ripper young core plus Jimmy Butler and Pat Riley trying his hardest to poach the Greek freak. So I think Eric Spoelstra has got to be pretty happy with himself. Unexpected run to the finals pretty much, but now they look really fucking good and loaded heading into the next couple of seasons, don't they? Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, Kostas Antetokounmpo! Costa! He's the first Greek freak, first Antetokounmpo to win an NBA title. Eat a dick, Giannis, he says. How's that group chat? How's your family WhatsApp? Just fucking... just eggplant emoji. Ah, oh, love it. Dion Waiters is a finals winner. You got... How's this? Dion just goes get high as a fucking kite, gets high as fuck and freaks out on a plane. And because of that, wins an NBA title. Gets fucking traded off, released, gets picked up by the Lakers, wins an NBA title. Not a bad way to live it, Dion. Jason Kidd, he's a weekend finals winner. His asking price for a head coaching gig just went back up, which he needed after that shit show in Milwaukee. Rob Pelinka, he's a weekend winner. Gets rid of Magic, stabs him in the back. Now looks like a fucking genius. All he had to do was give up everything they'd tanked for to get AD and bang. Good job, Rob. Jeannie Buss, love that. Now she can really tell her idiot brother to fuck off. That's a good one, isn't it? So, oh, you tried to take the team from me? How do these balls taste, motherfucker? Tyler Hero, he's a weekend finals winner. Look, didn't really show up in the massive way a lot of us were probably expecting after his awesome explosion against Boston, but still scored in double figures every single game of the playoffs as a rookie and is still nailing Kyle Kuzma's ex. So good job, Tyler Hero. And finals winner, Jimmy Butler. Look, despite a pretty mediocre Game 6, the legend of Jimmy Buckets just grows, doesn't it? He was amazing. I'm inspired. I'd run through a brick wall for Jimmy Butler is what I'm trying to say. We'll fucking say it, Jimmy. Shut up.
We're not losers.
No, you two are winners. Big winners. When I grow up, I want to marry a big winner like you guys. Shut up. Loser.
Loser. Loser. The Heat. Loser. Obviously finals losers because they lost the finals. And it was a pretty dispiriting way to finish the season as well. They'd fought so hard. They'd come so far. They force a game 6 after losing 2 of their best 3 players in game 1. And then they go out like this. Never expected it. But look, I think as I've sort of alluded to time and again, they played their game 7 in game 5. And it was pretty much expected. And I thought they'd keep it close, but they'd go down fighting and it wasn't quite there. So I don't know. Sometimes you just don't have the legs in that sort of spot, and that's exactly what happened. Other weekend finals, loser Boogie Cousins signs for the minimum with the Lakers, tears his ACL, looks like he's rehabbing, he's all good to go for the playoffs. And they cut him. Oh, geez. The playoffs, you know, the normal playoffs would have been back in fucking May. He reckons he would have been good to go. They cut him so they can sign a Morris twin, and he misses out on a title. They're like, oh, but Boogie's like entitled to a ring. If I'm Boogie, no fucking way do I want that ring. I don't need your pity ring. Fuck off. Giannis Antetokounmpo is a loser because he's got a little brother as a title. Can you imagine that one? Cool MVP, bros. You got one of these, though? Shows him the title ring. Pretty good. On you, Costa. Troy Daniels got cut. Then they signed Dion Waiters. It's got to suck for Troy Daniels. Goran the Flog, Dragic, and Bam Adebayo. Or if you're Mark Jackson, Bam Adebayo. Look, they're losers because, yes, they lost in the finals. But the tough part is for them. Like, they've got to live with the knowledge of getting hurt and injured in the finals. Meant they weren't able to go 100%. And that just fucking has to hurt your heart. It hurts your fucking heart! Ah, God. And I can't imagine how much that'd suck for them. So, look, that's a tough one for Goran and Bam, isn't it? You're just going to be sitting there fucking stewing that all the rest of... Well, it would be summer, but we've already been through summer in the US. So, there you go. And final loser, Kuzma! He was absolutely horrible for all but one of the games. He has to live with the knowledge that his ex is banging a dude who can't legally drink. And there was a petition for him not to get a ring. That's how much Lakers fans fucking hate the guy. But look, he skates through, doesn't show up for this one, doesn't matter. Still a loser though, old Coos. Tell you what. All right, let's do some game awards from today's game then, shall we? The NBA Australia approved performance of the night.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
LeBron James. 28 points, 14 rebounds, 10 assists. Shoots 13 of 20 from the floor. 1 of 5 from 3 after crushing it last game. You expected the 3-ball to drop off a bit, but still, only one turnover basically for the entire series. Wins his fourth finals MVP. Averages basically a 30-12-9 for the finals while shooting almost 60% from the field. That is absolutely fucking ridiculous. And the best part was his speech. You'll get my respect. Need my respect. And then he's on the floor, FaceTiming his mum, smoking a cigar, saying this shit wouldn't have been possible except for you. So fucking cool. LeBron, you're a legend. Absolute fucking legend. Unreal. Old mate, no mates, though.
Old mate, no mates.
Who's got no mates today? Well, I mean, kind of technically, you want to give this to Jimmy Butler. He's put his balls on the line all finals. Goes hammer and tongs. Throws up a couple of triple doubles. He's like, come on, fellas. Can you guys rock up for one fucking game? Duncan Robinson hits a couple of threes in the first quarter. You're like, maybe. But they all shoot like shit. No one can hit a shot. He can't either. It's a closeout game for Jimmy. I know you're down big, but also I kind of want Jimmy Butts to take more than 10 shots. 10 shots, yeah, maybe. But still, look, he gave his all. You can't give him old mate no mates, apart from the fact that his mates didn't rock up for the game for him. But how about Rob Lowe Pelinka? Jesus! Talk about old mate no mates. Old Vogues, Frankie Vogues, Frank Vogel, out there giving this speech. And by the way, do we really need in the NBA Finals the fucking owner of the team giving a speech? Fuck off. It's like, cut some checks. That's what you do. Settle down. You hire people. Yeah, fucking, yeah, awesome.
Let's hear from the CEO. Fuck, it's the chief financial officer, bro.
Awesome. Whereas Frank Vogel was out there pretty good, but LeBron's speech was absolutely fucking wild. Meanwhile, Vogues gives his awesome one. Even though the timbre of his voice is like, blur. But Rob Pelinka standing behind him goes to give him the high five, and Vogues blanks him. Sucked in, sucker! That's from Magic. Spud of the night.
Spud of the night.
Look, a couple of spuds that we could easily go to here. I mean, Tyler, there goes my hero. He's been great all playoffs until today. As mentioned, scored in double figures for every game of the playoffs except for this one. If there's one that we need from you, Tyler, it might be this. 3 of 10 shooting for 7 points, 4 turnovers, 4 assists. The turnovers reared their ugly head again. Tough scenes there. But, I mean, Andre Iguodala already mentioned the 2 threes that he took and missed horribly. Almost broke my shoulder on the other side of the world. Minus 20 in 11 minutes for Iggy.
Oh, they brought him in so they could stop LeBron.
LeBron had 28, 14, and 10. So, yeah, nah, didn't work out. And, of course, Goran the Flog Dragic. 2 of 8, that's just a tough one, though. Kuzma, I mentioned his 2 points, 1 rebound in 22 minutes. Horrible game for Kuz. I was expecting a little bit more. Look, if there's ever been a front runner, it's Kuzma. Like that dude, we're up 28. Now watch him swish bomb a million threes, but nah. Pantsing of the night. I mean, it feels weird to give like a spud of the night to like a rookie, a vet who's been there and won a finals MVP in Kuzma. So I'm just going to give it to Kuzma. Fuck him. Maybe Dwight just because he sucks and got demoted. Pantsing of the night. The Heat just got pantsed, didn't they? They got roundly spanked and beaten by Rondo, which is a rough one. It's like if you look back in a couple of weeks and go, fuck, man, how did we lose the finals? We got beaten by Rondo. Rondo! Like, in 2020, I can imagine that sentence making sense in about, like, 2013. But in 2020, Jesus, that is wild. That's like letting the weird nerd at your school fucking dack you and give you a paddling on the front lawn while everybody watches from their rooms or whatever. Tough scenes for the Heat to lose because of mostly Rondo. But anyway, it was also just on the cards that there was going to be a beatdown. Just Rondo was the one who helped deliver it. Better than Lonzo Ball for the last time in ages.
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you're going to get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros. Now I can be average. You're coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody. As long as everybody is our non-existent coach in New Orleans and the fact that my little brother is going to be better than me. Better than Lonzo Ball today. Caruso put on a Caruso show. His 4 points. That is more than every Lonzo Ball playoff point combined. So good job, Alex Caruso. You are better than Lonzo Ball, and you also have more rings. But Kuzma's got to feel pretty good about this, right? He's sitting there going, Lonzo is me mate. I'm hanging out with Spindles Ingram. They're my homies. What's up? I've got a ring, dickheads. Lonzo's going to be fuming. So how did that weird Armenian Allen-looking motherfucker get a goddamn ring before me? Tyler, there goes my hero. Better than Lonzo Ball easily. As mentioned, double figures every playoff game except for this one. And Kendrick Lamar, none. 8 points, eight shots. But still, I love his game. I think his eventual sort of growth into spark plug off the bench scorer is going to be awesome for the Heat. So enjoy that. And finally, I'm going to really miss doing these week game in, game out, day by day awards. I fucking love them. And it sort of sucks. But well. Here's hoping we get a fucking season again soon. Dickhead of the weekend.
Dickhead of the week.
Dwight Howard, you front-running, three-point shooting fuckhead. Can you believe it? We're up 1,000,000 points. I'm going to rub some salt in the wound because I'm Dwight Howard, cockhead extraordinaire. Can you believe it? Gross. Not only did this prick start the fucking bubble yelling out about how he was anti-vaccination, if there was ever a fucking anti-vaxxer that you're like, oh, yeah, that's right, it's for dumb people, Dwight Howard is the fucking poster boy. And as soon as they pulled him from the starting lineup, they absolutely shit-pumped Miami. Like, I think there's a correlation there. They put Caruso in the starting lineup, Dwight goes sits on the bench, and the Lakers come out fucking firing on all cylinders. And then Dwight literally adds insult to injury and shoots a three in the last couple of minutes on the Heat. I'd be like, just go fuck yourself, Dwight. If I was Jimmy Butler, just run over, just clock him one real quick. So get your last shot in. But look, good job, Lakers. You won. Happy for ya, I guess. Except for Dwight. All right, let's do some Yenars right after this.
This is Cam Glidden.
This is Anthony Drimmick.
This is Mitch McCarron.
This is Jason Kadee.
This is Darryl McDonald.
Hey guys, this is Hugh Greenwood.
Yo, what's going on? This is Ellie.
This is Mark Worthington, or commonly known as Wurtho, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's do some Yeah Nahs. And as usual, the NBA Australia Yeah Nahs are brought to you by thedailyliquor.com from East Ninth Brewing. If you're in Melbourne, you're under lockdown, don't waste any of your time outside standing in front of the fucking glass at the bottle or going, what beer am I going to get? Go to thedailyliquor.com, get your lips on some of their Ripper Boo specials. Some of their slab specials are fucking wild. I love it. The best part is they'll deliver it to your door. And if you use the code STRAYA, you get a free six-pack of the delicious, delicious, delicious Dos X. So, they also have wine and cocktails now. So, if you're not even into the beeros, or if you want to buy some stuff, the missus isn't into beers, boom. Sorted. In fact, old mate bought a bunch of wines the other day. They rocked up, but she's fucking stoked. Unreal. The best part was she got a free sixer. So good. Anyway, so there you go. Basically, go to thedailyliquor.com, peruse their booze specials, spend $20, use the code STRAYA, and you'll get a free six-pack on your mate, Jimmy. We've still got 2 weeks of AFL finals. We've got the prelims. We've got the granny. Better stock up now. Use the code STRAY, get some freebies, and away we fucking go! How good is that? You can use the code as many times as you want for the rest of the playoffs and probably for the rest of the NFL season too. But still, $20, use the code STRAYA, get a free six-pack, check out the wines, check out the cocktails, check out the beers. They're fucking legends. It's for the Melbourne metro area, same-day delivery before 1 o'clock. Go get around it, don't be a dickhead, and thank us later. All right, let's smash through some Yeah Nahs, and we'll do the Andrew Gaze Graham Umber Award as well and the Shane the Hammer Hill Shooter Shoot, because we'll just fang through the rest of this and we'll go to our interview with Shane Hill, which is fucking gross. So, real quickly, Jimmy, was that a disappointing end for Miami? Yeah, it was, kind of, but also, look, sometimes in basketball you get your ass kicked and there's not a giant amount you can do about it. That game, it was pretty obvious after game five that the Lakers supporting cast could have done a little bit more, and that's exactly what happened today. They get enough from LeBron and AD. The rest of the fellas rocked up. Rondo leads the way, and away you go. And the Heat, they just had nothing left. They played their game seven and game five, emptied the clip to force the game six, and couldn't quite get there. Was Goran the problem, Jimmy? I don't think... To be fair, when it comes to dudes like Goran coming back from an injury, I feel like it can throw off your offensive flow pretty easily, especially when he's hobbled, especially when he's tentative. I know he wants to get back out there, but I also kind of feel like you just have to go, look, I don't know, Goran. We'll give you like a couple of minutes. We'll see what happens. He misses those couple of shots. You may be playing a couple more minutes later, and that's it. But I feel like it wasn't great. But still... Big question is, would Miami have actually pushed the Lakers more with a healthy Goran and Bam? Yes, they would have. They would have pushed them more, but would they have had a shot at winning? I'm going to have to say nah. Look, I picked Miami to win, but having just sat through six games of that, I'm happy to admit that I think even with a healthy Bam and a healthy Goran, it would have been a tougher ask for the Lakers. But I do have a feeling LeBron would have still found a way to kick some ass and win. I feel like there wasn't a giant amount that was stopping him and AD in this series, right? Like, they both had some insane games. And despite the inconsistency of their always inconsistent supporting cast, when that supporting cast rocked up, they won. When they didn't, it was a lot tougher. And that's what happens night in, night out for this LA Lakers team. Once this team gets better, built around, you know, LeBron and AD a little bit better, it's a little bit scary. But look, I think Miami would have pushed them a little bit harder. I feel like the Lakers probably still would have won. It is a goddamn shame, however. Is there any sort of asterisks, Jimmy? No, of course not. No, because the next and last yeah, nah for today is going to be, is this going to go down as one of the hardest finals ever to win? Look, not just finals, but fucking seasons. Fuck yeah. I've been saying it for ages. To go through 3 months of quarantine, hotel living, no fans, no support networks for most of it is fucking remarkable. To come out the end of that, yeah, you're playing in a pretty nice shooter's gym, to be honest. But we did see some great basketball. But to get through that and do it the way that the Lakers did, 5-5-5-6, is pretty fucking unreal. Especially with this supporting cast where you're like, I'm not entirely sure who we can rely on night in, night out. They still did it. And that's how great LeBron and AD are. That you can have an inconsistent cast around them and just hope that like one or two of them pop each night and you can probably win the game doing it that way. So, but the actual length of the season, taking 5 months off in between, coming back, having a sprint to the finish basically, just the physical mental toll is absolutely fucking huge. So, props to the Lakers for winning, but also props to the Heat for making it this far too and just showing like they're a fucking badass team. So that was awesome. All right, unpopular opinion of the day.
Now look at me, please. Look at me.
Look at me. Yes. We're going to talk about this fucking ad nauseum probably for the next 20 years, aren't we? We're going to end up changing the idea, I think, of MJ versus LeBron to like best player versus best career. And I hate to think it, but by the time LeBron's done, we're probably going to be having, you know, an avalanche. We'll be staring at a mountain of evidence that points to best career for LeBron. With the caveat, I guess, of if MJ had all the modded advantages of LeBron, he would have killed motherfuckers. Like, that's how it would have gone. But, I mean, you can only go with what's going in front of you. And 17 years of LeBron like this is absolutely fucking insane. So he's top two all time. He was always going to be top two all time. He's there now. I think that's it. That might be unpopular. I'm still going to go MJ on number one, though, but six is still greater than four last time I checked. What do you reckon? But yeah, you can see it formulating, right? Best player versus best career is going to be like the way LeBron fans get around the fact that MJ went 6-0 in finals. All right, Outback Takehouse, what do you reckon? Oh, geez. It's Monday at Outback, and you know what that means? Oh, yes. Alice Springs Chicken, because Davo hit another emu in his Holden Rodeo, and I'll tell you what, these bastard birds cook up a treat. And they're now on the specials board. Alice Springs Chicken, only at Outback. And today's Flame Grill takes are: LeBron James needed 5 months off in the middle of the season to rest up, which is why he won his fourth title and why it shouldn't count. And the other one is Jimmy Butler tanked game six to motivate him. Motivate himself for next year. Ah, love it. No, of course not. That is, like, it's wild. Like, you know, the LeBron Cleveland title, 2 weeks off in Miami in the middle of the season. This time he gets 4 months off. I think there's no asterisks. Good on you, LeBron. And Jimmy Butler, he is the kind of lunatic who's like, man, I fucking lost the finals, comes back and just starts like 100% like training at 3:30 in the morning, waking up his teammates. All right, let's do an Andrew Gaze. We'll just do quickly the other awards, the Andrew Gaze Grey Mamba Award. It's the first Andrew Gaze Grey Mamba. Clap it up. Clap it up. It is the last time we give out the Andrew Gaze Grey Mamba Award for outstanding achievement in the field of excellence for this season. And it's pretty obvious it has to go to LeBron. 17 years in, LeBron James wins a finals game with a triple-double to his name as well. His fourth finals MVP, 11 triple-doubles in finals alone. That is fucking crazy. Only player to ever win three finals MVP with three different franchises. Four titles in all. Pretty bloody good. Probably should have had another finals MVP back in 2015, but still. Absolutely crazy. And he was amazing in this game. And I think the speech after, where he's just so cognizant of the other players, the rest of the organization, the coaching staff, the front office, everybody, and himself, was fucking unreal. So good job, LeBron James. You win this season's final Andrew Gaze Grey Mamba Award for outstanding achievement in the field of excellence. All right, what about a Shane Heal Shooter Shoot, Shoot Your Shot, Light Him Up Award? Before we go to talk to Shane Heal.
Shooter Shoot.
He threw it down. Are you healed? Are you healed?
Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord, for I'm healed. It is Rondo turned into Ray Allen in the biggest game of the year. I mean, Ray Allen went 7 of 9 from 3 in a closeout finals game, but also went 0 of 4 and 0 of 2 from downtown in 19 minutes of a closeout game with the Heat. So Ray John Allen Rondo, 30 minutes, 19 points, 8 of 11 from the floor, 3 of 4 from 3, and never looked like missing. Now there's a shooter who shoots. I love it. How many games do you reckon Rondo actually hit 3 threes all year in? It was literally, he had done it three other times. He hit four against Phoenix back in February. That came after he did it against Golden State as well. So he was on an absolute tear. He did it twice in November and then did it today. Unbelievable. Well, that's four. There you go. So this is the fifth time he's hit three threes all season. That is the Shane Heal Memorial Shooter Shoot. Rondo's like, nah, fuck it. I'm open. I'm shooting. Fuck you. And wins the finals because of it. Unbloody real. All right. Final little bit. We've got a bit of a game, you know, pick wrap and everything, but we've also got a quick Patty Mills game day baller, game day Twitter check-in, which is going to go to Joe Ingles today. as it has done for like a little while, because Joe Ingles just hanging out there being awesome. And Jingling Joe Ingles is out there wishing Mike Conley a happy birthday. This comes after the day where the day after he was going to buy Jeff Carter a jersey, and also Ante Tomic, unreal. Jingling Joe Ingles, I see you, still young. Sunglasses emoji, cry laughing emoji, because he's doing work out there in, I think, for Barcelona. Good shit. On your Jingles, always a legend. All right, to wrap up our picks for the year, before we go to Shane Hill, we went 0 of 1 on today's pick. I did have, I think, Miami plus 6.5. I thought it'd be close. It was not. Hilariously enough, I put my money on the Lakers in the end because I talked myself out of that pick. But the other best bets for today, we went 2 of 3. So Danny Green over 1.5 threes, that was a win. AD over points missed, but the total points under was also a win. So good stuff. But to wrap up, so we went 2 of 3 in that one. So 2 of 4 basically for today. So let's go. That's 55 of 98 for the finals. The picks, not bloody bad. And for the season, that means 565 of 1,072 picks. Whew, not bad. Not bad. The 10 best bets for the finals, I think we went 4 of 10 on. Because AD top point scorer didn't hit, and his series average didn't hit either, but we did hit the LeBron assists over. We hit the Duncan Robinson made threes over. We missed on the Tyler Hero made threes over. We hit on the KCP series made threes. And I believe there was a Rondo assists under that we hit. But of course, we missed Miami to win the finals 4-2 and Butts to win the finals MVP, which was the favorite. Well, you don't win all of them. All right, that's awesome. That is the season. And the finals have been won by the Los Angeles Lakers of Los Angeles, California. Awesome, awesome final series. Now, let's go to our first part of our chat with Shane the Hammer Heel. It's awesome. Enjoy. Right after this one.
This is Mitch Creek, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, I promised at the top of the show, that's right, he's our very special, super secret guest. He's a legend of Australian basketball. He's the blonde bombshell. The wonder boy from the eastern suburbs, the man who tried to fight Charles Barkley, the bloke who wouldn't take shit from Gary Payton, the NBL champion, four-time Olympian, dead set Aussie legend, one-time Geelong Supercat. It's the Hammer, Shane Hill. How you going?
What an intro, mate. That is a unique intro. I don't reckon I've ever had one like that before. It is fantastic beyond. Appreciate it.
Well, look, 500 episodes of NBA Australia, and it's taken me this long to actually get you on the show. I feel like you deserve an intro befitting a career, Hammer. So it's pretty great. I mean, you're hanging out now, doing cool stuff. You're retired from playing hoops. It's like, what's life now like for Shane the Hammer Heel? 10 years after you've retired from, more than 10 years, obviously, from playing. So what's it been like since you've actually retired?
Yeah, I mean, I've got three daughters, so everything's about family life for me. My kids are probably the most important thing in my life. So we live in Sydney and I still coach and develop young players and are passionate about really improving players' skills. And obviously the commentary, I love having a voice on it. I love being able to, follow the game and passionate about the NBL, obviously. And with the basketball show, it's allowed us to be able to do that on a weekly basis as well, which has been cool because we want to break things down and we want to be able to give an unfiltered sort of view of what's happening in the NBL. And I think we're able to do that without feeling like we've got to, suck up to anybody at the same time.
Yeah, not beholden to anybody. It's one of the best parts of the basketball show, which is great. But I mean, like, you've really, it's pretty interesting sort of looking back at your career and, like, when pro athletes retire, like, you've really managed to, like, from the coaching, the business stuff, commentary, like, you've sort of just been around there, like, in the periphery and then front and center sometimes as well. And it's really cool. Like, I feel like we need that from our, especially with our sort of golden generation of basketballers, to sort of keep that vibe going from the 90s and the 1000s, right? And I feel like it's been a really great moment having like you, Gazy, sort of just always out there and always around. I think that's why people appreciated Luke Longley being a part of the Boomers coaching squads and stuff like that, right? So it's really cool to get that giving back almost aspect and keeping you guys around. It makes it sort of feel more like a through line, if you will, from then to now.
Well, I think, you know, different people have different passions. And for me, you know, I fell in love with basketball at a really young age. It's what I love. It's in my blood. So I love talking it. I love watching it. I love playing it and coaching it. That's just the way it is. And to stay involved and have a voice. And, you know, I like to talk to people too, because, you know, people talk about the NBL. The greatest days of the NBL were the 90s. And, you know, being able to talk through that and say, yeah, they were great days, but we're actually come into some really good days as well. So hopefully being a transition between the two and be able to talk up some of the great talent that we've got here in Australia right now, and the quality of the NBL and being able to be a little bit of a voice and a bit of a face for that as well, I think has probably filled a void.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty cool because, I mean, I've, you know, any listening to NBA Australia knows that I've lived overseas like the last, you know, 6 years, moved back home, catch some NBL, and I'm just like, holy shit, like this is so much better than the product I left like a long time ago, and like it's awesome. So you're not wrong there when it comes to like basically trying to keep up the passion for the game and how I feel like people really need to understand that like this is actually a really fucking good moment and time, I think, for pro hoops in Australia, right? Like it's pretty awesome. It's surprisingly awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it went down a long way from the early 2000s. You look at that next 10 years and, geez, it wasn't at a very good level. And to be honest, if Larry hadn't have come in, it was more a glorified Siebel than it was, you know, a National League with some of the budgets and the direction it was heading and the way it was seen, you know, from the public. But I think since, you know, Larry and his team took over, and it takes money to be able to do that, not just foresight, but he's got obviously got deep pockets to be able to invest in that. And, you know, I think decisions like being able to get the next stars in place, add an extra import, makes a big difference. And then attracting, I think, owners that have got the money for their teams where they want to spend and bring really good, talented players, you know, to Australia and then hold on to some of the Aussies that wouldn't have necessarily stayed here. They would have gone to Europe if they were falling short of the NBA. But now they're staying here. Guys like Chris Golding that would have made an international career. Well, he's made a great living playing in the NBL, and we know he's a great player.
And got great hair, something you were always known for too, until, you know,
great hair.
You whipped it off this year. But still, I mean, it is crazy. Like, I think there was even a moment where Gazy was like, yo, I feel like we might need to shut this down and recoup and reset the NBL. And then luckily, I guess, with Larry and co, they kind of did that on the fly, didn't they? And it sort of really helped sort of reboost it.
Well, and I don't think Andrew was far off. I think, you know, if there wasn't a Larry come along with deep pockets to be able to invest in the league, that's sort of where it was.
Yeah.
It was going back to basics again. But, you know, he's been able to have a fantastic foresight and brought some really smart people with him as well to be able to take it to the next level. But I think attracting the right owners has been one of the keys as well, because without having the right owners of the individual clubs that are prepared to spend, use their contacts, bring in great imports as well, it was never going to get to the next level. But the last few years have been really competitive. Now I reckon moving forward, this could be our very most competitive NBL that we've had, with obviously Gorge coming back to Illawarra and the job they've done of recruiting, and the way New Zealand have recruited in the offseason has been incredible as well. So I can't wait for next year.
Yeah. Just one more thing about retirement. Like, did you ever think, like, you know, did you have any expectations about what would happen after you retired? Like, has there been anything that really surprised you about, like, the last, you know, 10 odd years plus of not playing? Like, is there something that sort of stands out where you're like, huh, I didn't really expect that, but I fucking love it. Or this is a bit weird, I didn't expect that.
Nah, not really. I mean, you go through different things off the court and ups and downs and all the rest of it. But I guess the most enjoyable thing for me has been able to sort of ride the transition and the career of my kids as well, and particularly my youngest daughter that now is playing professionally and now is looking to be in the WNBA draft in April. And so that side of it gives a whole lot of enthusiasm, where you're putting time in and sharing in a vision as well for her to achieve her dreams. I was lucky enough to, you know, achieve, you know, most of mine, So to see her passionate about something and happy about something and putting time in is something as a parent that you're always happiest to see.
Love it. I mean, speaking of growing up and actually wanting to play hoops, I mean, you always said growing up you told your dad early on you wanted to play for Australia, and you did, which is pretty awesome. But in terms of stuff behind the scenes, I mean, you've got to have like a maniacal work ethic, obviously, to make that sort of dream come true. So what was that sort of like growing up? Like, how hard were you working? Like, are we talking the crazy early wake ups, down to the gym, shooting all the time? What was it like?
Yeah, it wasn't early mornings, but I was just always shooting and always training. And I always had that mentality that because I loved doing it, but I'd always challenge myself and come up with new drills, and I'd shoot with ankle weights on, and then I'd go and run longer and go long distance running and all of those sort of things. But then I knew I had to shoot the ball differently being small. So I really created a shot that was sort of released a little bit higher, and then I'd want to create a step back and do things a little bit differently. And I was always sort of challenged a little bit growing up because I was a scoring guard. And back in the day, you know, that was the Phil Smythe era. I was coming down as a point guard and organizing and really not taking a lot of shots, not being aggressive. So I was trying to break through that as well to be able to play the style that I always believed that guards should have been able to play, and that's the way they obviously all play now. So but I loved it. I was just so passionate, so it didn't feel like it was work for me because I was just doing what I loved doing. And you know, I just spent hours and hours obviously playing games and training with teams, but I'd come home and just put in so much more time on my own as well.
And your mum was guarding you with a broomstick, I believe.
Yeah, well, I'd play against my brother and he'd get sick of it, and then I'd convince my mum to come out, and I'd make her, you know, defend me with the broom so I could get that shot off a little bit quicker, and then she'd get tired, so then I'd just, you know, go through that whole cycle again. So, and we grew up on 28 acres out in the Dandenong, so it wasn't like you had mates just around the corner. You had to make sort of, you know, arrangements for people to be coming over and playing one-on-one and all the rest of it. But certainly had enough space to be able to get that done.
And also, depending on the sort of broom, it could have looked exactly like Mark Bradke's haircut at any moment in time, which would have been awesome. I kind of want to talk about this one a little bit later, but I mean, it kind of just got brought up. Being the scoring guard back in the early 90s, as you sort of break through, versus like you're like the typical sort of scoring guard for today's game. And it's like you're almost one of those very, very unique sort of prototypes. Obviously, do you feel like you've got a game that would just be perfectly horrifyingly well suited for today's game?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be playing in today's NBA because every team needs sort of snipers, people that can shoot the ball. It's encouraged to be able to do it. And someone sent me a box score the other day of when I was playing in the NBA, and our team shot 9 threes in total. you know what I mean? It's like
you'd be shooting 9 threes a game, you would be. Holy shit.
Yeah, it was like that, you know, that was just a different mindset. You'd come down, you'd dribble it up, you'd post people up, and, you know, you'd play out of it. It was a real post sort of era back then, and obviously it's really changed now. And I always felt like when I was playing, I'd come down in fast break, and if I was open for a three, I'd want to shoot that three in transition. And even back then, people would say, oh, listen, you probably need to move the ball a little bit. We'll get in the office. And it didn't make sense to me because I'm like, well, if I'm open now and I'm shooting 500 threes a day, I'm saying I'm going to make that more than I'm going to miss it. And if we work the offense, we're never getting a better shot than what I'm going to get in transition. But trying to convince people of that back in the day was a little bit more difficult. It didn't make sense because no one had really done it or seen it. And, you know, coming in for Phil Smythe on the Australian team, I really had to change the way that you can play as a point guard, because I felt like even though I was a scoring point guard, my assists were always greater than any other Australian point guard because you're trying to create, you're being aggressive, and you still are concentrating on bringing other people into the game as well, like the modern day point guards do.
Yeah, it's like if you had ever played for Mike D'Antoni, I feel like that would have been the match made in heaven, right? He would have made you a lot of money. I mean, that's how it goes. But I mean, for comparison's sake, like Patty Mills, in only 22 minutes a game last season, was shooting 6 threes a game. Versus like an entire team taking 9, which is pretty wild. Speaking of which, I mean, obviously NBL stuff. I mentioned that you played for Detroit, much loved Supercats. You know, growing up in Ballarat, anytime we got to go down to Geelong, shit, that was the big smoke. Fucking love Geelong. Detroit, Rock City. But you had your stint in Brisbane. You end up in Geelong, back in Brisbane, and then pretty famously in Sydney as well, before you make it off to the NBA. And, I mean, pretty heady times for the NBL around this sort of explosion of hoops in Australia in the early 90s. What was that sort of like, especially with the Brisbane and Sydney stints? It must have been fucking crazy, right?
Well, I mean, let's not skip over Geelong, because if you've been to Geelong, you would have been hanging out at the Geelong Hotel too after a game, because that was rocking in the late 80s and early 90s. But, you know, it was funny going from Brisbane, where we averaged 12,000 people a game, going to a club like Geelong that the season before I went there was the only team in the history of the NBL that's never won a game. And a lot of people are sort of like, well, why would you win Rookie of the Year? You're starting for the Bullets as a 17-year-old, go and actually play in Geelong. But it was all about Barry Barnes for me, because he was my mentor and he took over and we were able to build something really special. I loved my time playing in Geelong and the people of Geelong, and still got a lot of good friends down there now. But, you know, when they sacked Barry, it was about going back to Brisbane and spending some years there and ultimately ending up in Sydney. And, you know, whenever we travelled in the NBL to Sydney, we would arrive, drive through Mascot, go to Chinatown and stay around the entertainment centre. And I was like, how does anyone live in this shithole? What a shit place Sydney is. And it was funny, because once I moved to Sydney and you actually live here and you live in the suburbs and you realize the way it is, it's just a great place. And, you know, I didn't ever think that I would be living here, and that's home.
Love it. That's awesome. I mean, the hype around it as well at the time was absolutely awesome. Like the games that we got to go to, obviously growing up in Ballarat, down to Geelong on the odd occasion, managed to catch a couple of, I had, you know, Darryl McDonald was kind enough to join the show in the NBA hiatus, which is fucking great. Just chatting to D-Mac, and like, I remember seeing him playing for the North Melbourne Giants and stuff like that, which was just an absolute delight. But just what I recall most about that sort of time was just the absolute like insanity of the crowds. And, just how like over the top it felt like it sometimes. I mean, I was a kid, so I'm just like wowed by a lot of things. But like comparing it to like going to a footy game or something at the time, it was fucking awesome. The hype was real. And I mean, you're obviously out there shredding, dropping bombs, with the peroxide hair, the mullet, the earring. I mean, it's just great. It's fucking awesome. So I can't imagine what it would have been like to actually be living it as well, right?
Well, I mean, I loved it playing in Victoria growing up as a Victorian. I used to have family and my mates come to all the games in Melbourne and then come down to Geelong and all the rest of it. We had a great time. And you're right. I mean, there was four or five teams in Victoria at the time playing in the NBL. But then we used to go and play on a Wednesday night in the VBA. So we would go to Ballarat. We would go to Bendigo. We would go to all the different places. And you're in Coburg and Nunawading and all of the rest of it on a Wednesday night. And Barry Barnes used to say, mate, if you don't want to play, you know, don't play. We've got a big game at the NBL. I'm like, mate, I'm playing. You know, just the opportunity to be able to get an extra game in on a Wednesday night at a high level. And when you go to places like Ballarat, they had a really good Siebel program. So they would come after you like that was a grand final for them.
Yep.
You know, getting an opportunity to play against the NBL guys. So something to prove. And I loved just being able to, you know, be in those days and to be able to do what I love to do. And that was play.
Love it. This all sort of culminates, I think, you know, we've got the golden generation in the NBL, obviously, at that time. And obviously, Gazy heads over to the NBA in 93 for his little Bullet stint. But really, obviously, the mark is made, probably those 96 Olympics, obviously. And famously, the story that you've been a part of roughly 40 billion fucking times, I guess, is you fronting up to Barkley after he undercut you like a bastard. To be honest, I feel like this gets lost a lot in this story, right? I don't think people quite understand how much of a dirty play it was by Chuck. Like, he's straight up trying to fucking submarine you in the air, comes in super late, it's dirty as shit, and you get up, have some words, and everyone's like, oh, man, the mouthy little Australian. It's like, did you see what Barkley fucking did? Of course he's going to get up and have a go.
Well, I feel like that got lost in transition as well. Like, I think if anyone else had have done that, they would have been all over him saying how bad it was. If, you know, if you did that in Ballarat on a Monday night, they'd be like, mate, you can't do that. So he deserved a spray. And, you know, there was a bit of emotion going on because I dropped a couple of trifectas and feeling pretty good. And the whole thing sort of took off from there. But it's amazing now, 24 years later, that I don't have someone, you know, ask me about it every day, but it would still be every second day. I'd go down to have a coffee. And it's amazing how many people go, oh, I remember when you took on Charles Barkley. And then other people go, oh, yeah, you took on that big Shaq guy. I remember. I'm like, no, wrong guy. Yeah, but, yeah, I've got you.
But what was it, 8 threes, 28 points in the exhibition game against the Dream Team 3 in Salt Lake City, which is obviously just a wild place to play anyway. And I think, you know, it's weird as well because there's also a bizarre sort of Bradkey Malone moment in that game as well. So tension, you know, emotions are high, and then you get undercut, you have a go. Gaze is out there playing peacekeeper and stuff. What was it like actually just, you know, the entire environment around that at the time during that game? Is it just like fucking, look, we're not going to back down. We're going to have a go. Fuck yous.
Well, that's how we were going into the game, just that, you know, obviously it's a long shot that we can win it, but let's go and have a crack because a lot of the other teams – we're getting photos taken with them and autographs and all the rest of it. And we're like, no, we're not going to play that. Let's go and have a crack. And because we'd made some shots and we're starting to feel good, and they were in a crazy mood that night. Vlahov got into it with Malone a lot, and Vlahov doesn't back down from anybody. So it was nice having him on our side, particularly, as you said, with Andrew Gaze. Because I remember at one stage when Barkley had me and then I had him as we were going to our huddle, the first person I turned around to look at to say, have I got – you know, a little somebody, you know, backing me up here. The first person I saw was Andrew Gaze. And with the fear of God in his eyes, you should have seen him. I tell you, it was like, this does not give me a whole lot of confidence because if Barkley hits me, I'll still be asleep today, I reckon. But it was just us sort of doing what we do. There was no different. It was the makeup of our team. And I think it helped us as much as anything else. We got smashed in that game, but we went into that tournament as massive underdogs. No one thought that we were going to make the top eight, let alone the top four. And to beat some of the teams that we beat along the way without Luke Longley was probably one of our best performances in Olympic history, really, for the Boomers, as far as overachieving, really. And then the next time we played against America, they knew all about us. They knew the scouting report. They prepared. They'd seen a whole tournament of exactly what we've run and everything else. And I think in that game, at the Atlanta Dome, we came as close to them as anyone at the Olympics. So it was a really good result in the end.
Yeah, I mean, the craziest game out of that one was actually the Croatia game to get you to the medal rounds, which was awesome. And obviously just an absolute fucking barn burner, close as hell, riding on just some crucial shots. And then, I mean, in that first half, as you mentioned against the Americans, like you're actually in it. Like you're in with a fucking shot. Yeah. So it must have been an absolutely wild ride to go through that tournament. It's just like that very much like I feel like that run was probably the most important moment for Australian basketball like to that point and probably since. Like it's just we're not afraid. We're here. Fuck yous. And it was fucking like a kid back in Australia watching this shit, which is exactly what I was. Like it's inspiring. And this is exactly why probably something like NBA Australia exists and why a million people fucking love basketball in this country, right?
Well, I think it we stood up at an important time for basketball in Australia, but doing it in America. And I think doing it on the biggest stage because there were so many people watching those Olympics and particularly, you know, there was, I think there was 35 or 40,000 people at the Atlanta Dome. The atmosphere was crazy, but those guys are such big names around the world that we're on that stage actually competing with them to be able to get to that next level, knowing we were probably pretty undermanned. Like that team compared to the 2000 team, we probably had 60% of the talent of what we had in 2000, but the camaraderie, the roles, the role we got on, the way we felt was probably our most impressive tournament, I reckon.
Yeah, I feel like, so 2000 Olympics, you're at home and like it's that really felt like the solidification of it, right? It's like, yeah, this golden generation, this might be the sort of big last hurrah that they have, but like Australian basketball will probably be taken seriously forever now on the international stage. Like there's even the Vince step over on Gaze and stuff. And like, it's just back on, like it was the fucking best. Like again, like that generation of kids who'd seen it in 96 are watching in 2000 going, fuck yes, this is great. Which was amazing. I mean, that must've been just, I mean, you obviously we've just had like the 20th anniversary and especially with Gaze out there with the flag, you with the camcorder, in your hand?
That was his camcorder. I had to bloody carry his camcorder the whole time because he's carrying the flag. I'm like, come on, man. Mate, what am I like, your little lackey? Just because I was his roommate.
But I mean,
and he made a video out of it.
I mean, what an experience, though, 2000 Olympics. I mean, that must have just been fucking next level.
No, it really was incredible. And, you know, you talk about Drewy carrying the flag. And, you know, I remember because we were roommates for three of my four Olympics, he got told and he came back to the room. He's like, mate, I'm not allowed to tell anybody, but check this shit out. I'm carrying the fucking flag. And it was like, you know, we were dancing around like little kids and all the rest of it. It was exciting for the boomers, but it was exciting for Australia.
Yep.
To have somebody like Drewy that was so passionate about the sport and much loved, you know, around Australia, being able to do that. And it gave us a good lift. But what also came with the 2000 Olympics was expectation.
Yep.
Because we had such a good team. And when we came up against Canada in the first game, we went down to Steve Nash and the Canadians and put a whole lot of pressure on our team, then having to win some of the biggest games, you know, in our sports history, to still make it through to the top four and give ourselves a chance to be able to compete, which we did, and then fell way short, you know, when it got to the medal rounds.
Yeah, Lithuania back to back. God damn. It still hurts me, and I wasn't even on the fucking team, Hammer. Jesus. Ugh.
Yeah. It wasn't good. I mean, in 96, it was incredible that we played Lithuania without Luke. You know, they got Sabonis. I can't even remember his numbers, but they were off the charts. Just dominated these NBA guys that we were up against. And at that stage, we didn't have an NBA player. We were all just playing in the NBL. And to, you know, get as close as we did for that elusive medal compared to 2000, where they're a great nation, you know, the Lithuanians, but we had as much talent to be able to seriously compete, but just couldn't get it done at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, in between this as well, you obviously have your first NBA stint with the T-Wolves. So obviously NBA Australia for in different parts over the last 3 years, we've highlighted specific days on the calendar where someone's gone fucking hammer and tongs, and obviously the hammer has done that. And some of the most favourited and beloved ones that we've had featured on NBA Australia have been the Shane Heal T-Wolves, if only because, to be honest, those T-Wolves jerseys were fucking beautiful back in 97. I'll tell you what.
They were good jerseys, weren't they?
They're great. So famously, you tell Terry Porter, one of the vets on the team, to go fuck himself when he's like carrying my bags, rook, trying to, you know, haze you as a rookie. And you're like, oh, I'm not a rookie. How did that go down with Terry?
No, it wasn't good. He didn't really see the funny side of that. But I actually ended up getting on really well with Terry. He's such a pro. But at the time, we went through a bit of a rough period because, you know, I don't think he liked the fact that I stood up to him. And he said in front of everyone almost to sort of put me down a little bit to see how I'd react. And I said, mate, wherever you leave that fucking bag when we get off the bus, that's where you're going to find it. I said, because I'm not touching shit. And everyone just looked. It's like, oh, shit, you don't say that to Terry Porter. So we went through a bit of a rough stage, but then, you know, he came around and he became a little bit of a mentor. He was really good. And he was one of the only guys I ever played against that he came to me one day and he goes, mate, I've worked your shot out. He goes, you're not scoring on me. And he fucking did. Whoa. I couldn't, like, whenever we're at practice, he just found a way to get a hand in the shot pocket where I couldn't bring my shot up to be able to get it off like I did for my entire career against, you know, most players that I could play against. He was just so smart and such a student of the game. And, you know, I learned heaps from him.
Wow. Obviously went on to be a coach as well and do lots of awesome, like, I mean, played for a million years in the NBA too. So that's awesome. That was a wild team as well to be on, that T-Wolves team. You've got young KG, rookie Stephen Marbury that year.
Yeah.
Just absolutely insane. I mean, you make the playoffs, but you've got Stjoko Vrankovic, you've got Cherokee Parks. You get out there for a little bit of run.
Tom
here and
Googly
there.
Otter, mate. Tom Googly Otter.
Fucking love Googs.
That was my boy. Googs, mate. He was an all-star. He played in the all-star game that year. He was awesome.
Gun team. I mean, just the place itself as well. I mean, you don't spend a giant amount of time at home during a season, obviously, but what was it actually like, Minneapolis, to like live there and go, shit, I'm an NBA player?
Yeah, I mean, it was a different time because, you know, only Luke had sort of done it. So it was pretty wild that all of a sudden I got two kids under two. We pack up and, you know, we end up, you know, in minus 30 degrees. And it was pretty tough on the family because whilst I was loving life and you're on the plane all the time and you're going and coming back and for a few days and away you go, the family sort of in that sort of weather conditions just don't leave the house. So yeah. We had a lot of family come over to look after them as well. But it was exciting. It was eye-opening. It was wild with Steph and KG. Even though they were boys, they went at it a lot as well. They would argue a lot. They both had posses of four or five guys that would come with them to training every day and that were living with them. So it was pretty eye-opening, you know, that whole thing as well and yep. The way it worked. But both were really good to me. Steph was great to be able to train on every day. Just wild, unbelievably athletic, but really didn't know how to run a team or to be able to fit into the team. So he frustrated a lot of the veterans at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy, like, just to sort of look at that team. You do make the playoffs. You play the Rockets. And your mate, Charles Barkley, on that team, which is pretty great. You actually got out there on the court as well for a couple of the games. But you got swept, I think. I think it was 3-0, wasn't it? But Hakeem's out there as well. Clyde Drexler. Just, you know, this is the champion Rockets that you're going up against in the first round of the playoffs with a pretty young team, as you mentioned, Googs as well. But, I mean, that must have been pretty fucking crazy as well. Playoff atmosphere, Western Conference, just awesome.
Yeah, I remember because I think it was the first time Minnesota had ever made the playoffs, right?
Would have been close to, yeah.
I think so, which actually hurt me in the end a little bit as well because the expectations were that that team probably was going to fall a little bit short. And if you're going to fall a little bit short, then, you know, the second half of the year, you're going to play people to get the experience and all the rest of it. And because I had a three-year contract, sort of long-term sort of thoughts of what they were doing. But because we were looking like we were going to make the playoffs, then the whole rotation just shorted, was short. And it, like the last three or four players really weren't playing too much at all for the last part of the season. So that became a little bit frustrating as well. And obviously they'd brought Terry Porter in, you know, to be that backup, knowing that, you know, it was my role probably for the second and third year to be able to step into that. But being Australian, they didn't have a lot of belief in players outside of America at that stage of basketball around the world. And you even look at the stories of Petrovic and these guys that were really frustrated at the end of benches for a long time and didn't get the opportunities. And, you know, I certainly saw that and felt that.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy as well, because obviously you do go into, you start off with the Wolves the next season as well. Like you do summer league and stuff as well, right? Training camp and then get injured. Is that right? I feel like.
Yeah, I went and did summer league. So Utah was the big summer league back then, but they only had most of the players were on contract, so they weren't looking to get a lot. So we shared a team with Orlando, I think. So we only played half a game each, but I led the summer league in assists. I was feeling great. I'd never worked harder than I did between my first and second season in the NBA. And then once we went to training camp, Steph got injured. So I ended up starting, I want to say it was the last seven games of exhibition season. And so I'm playing 25, 28 minutes a game, feeling good, having double figures. And in the last exhibition game, I got injured and I was out 14 weeks. And, you know, I don't have too many regrets in my life, but that was one of them that I said, no, I just don't want to be here. I want to go home and with the family and all the rest of it. And they tried to convince me four or five times. No, you got a contract. You got two more years to go. Sit tight, relax. Agent did the same thing, but I was sort of convinced that I just didn't want to be there.
Yeah. What do you reckon would have happened if you had stuck around?
Well, I don't know. I think that I was pretty impatient. You know, I look at somebody like Patty Mills that wasn't impatient. He was, you know, happy to wave the towel, and, you know, maybe his personality, you know, allowed him to be there and be less patient and learn from those sort of things to be there longer. But, you know, I have no doubt that, you know, I could have played significant minutes in the NBA and contributed, in a positive way. But at the same time, I always wanted to be able to play if I couldn't play. And then when I went back for my stint with San Antonio, I was 33 or 34 and different mindset. I didn't want to sit at the end of the bench. I really didn't want to sit there. I found it, I used to talk to Sean Marks, and Sean had been there for a long time, and he wasn't even in the 12. He was like on IR most of the time, making $1 million a year, married an American girl. But it didn't worry him at all that he was never playing. He was just
classic Kiwi, though, right there.
Yeah, but it was like I couldn't relate. And we got along so well. We hung out so much. But I was like, mate, how do you do this? So when I got cut for San Antonio, they said, listen, we're messing with the rosters. We've got one player we're going to cut. I knew it was Ron Mercer. It was a big contract. They said, we'll put you up for the next 10 days because we'll look to re-sign you. And I got an offer to go back to Greece that the next day, and I was like, nah, fuck that. I'm going to go play in Greece. I want to play. If I'm going to end my career, you know, sitting as the 12th man for the San Antonio Spurs, it's just not sort of the way I'm built.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, you had a pretty good game against the Knicks that season as well. You've still got, so 2004, had the Admiral retired that year after they won the title?
He'd retired, and then, yeah, the next season I came in. I think the Knicks might have been the first game of the season. I think I had double figures off the bench.
Yep.
Against the Knicks. I think Charlie Ward started for them. I remember taking a charge against him.
Love it. You got young.
Unheard of me taking a charge. That's why I remember it.
Ah, man. Young Tony Parker, Manu on that. You could have been the next Steve Kerr almost, Hammer. Just right there. But oh, well. All right, let's leave Hammer there and we'll go to part two in the next episode of NBA Australia. In the meantime, that interview and this show has been brought to you by comfortfoods.com.au. The legends at Comfort Foods. It's with a Z, like my name. How good is that? C-O-M-F-O-R-T, foods, with a Z.com.au. Go check out comfortfoods.com.au for an amazing array of meal and dessert foods. They'll deliver in Sydney and Melbourne. The best bit is, it's fucking burritos, empanadas, and it's grouse. There's even ice cream as well. You can get it a whole meal delivered to your door. It is absolutely unreal. Get $10 off if you spend a bunch of money there with the code STRAYA and you'll be fucking laughing, mate. They've got the beef and onion empanadas. I love a good empanada, but the burritos are unreal. They're huge. They're tasty as hell. Go get around it. Comfortfoods.com.au. $10 off. You spend 100 wing whams. 10% off. Not bloody bad. Go check it out. Comfortfoods.com.au. And now, the end of the show.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Oh, yes. How good is Hammer? Absolutely love it. It is the most fun chatting to him. He's an absolute legend. Really enjoyed that. The best part is there's some really good shit in part two. So I reckon we're going to be running that on Wednesday. Because I think what we'll do on Wednesday's show as well, we'll do sort of like a bit of a season wrap, season winners and losers, with a big, big wrap up for the 501st episode of NBA Australia. But Hammer, yeah, talking about Europe, talking about the NBL and some of the crazy shit that they went through in the thousands and everything is really, really, and like, especially the South Dragon stuff. So, it's really fun. Can't wait to, hook you up with that, but that'll be for Wednesday, I reckon. And, you know, we'll see what else sort of wraps up from the finals. And, yeah, we'll do a big season winners and losers, which would be good. So, in the meantime, and for the rest of the off-season, get around NFL Australia, because we'll be doing that, myself and my buddy Gaz, doing NFL Australia week in, week out, talking all things NFL, doing the usual dumb shit. But also, we'll be all over Twitter, Facey, IG, all the time, all off-season. We will probably still be doing weekly shows as well. We've got the draft coming up. We've got free agency. Can't wait. Might take a bit of a break after that. Who knows? But either way, socials, Twitter, Facey, IG. Get around NBAAustralia.com/shop. Go buy some merch. Would you? Hoodie, t-shirt. Got some stubby holders there. Chuck us a rating and review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, whatever app you're using on your Android phone, whatever. If you can rate and review, it does really fucking help. So come on, hook your buddy Jimmy up. Go to thedailyliquor.com if you're in Melbourne. Get a free six-pack when you bang in the code STRAYA and spend 20 wing whams. How good is that? They'll deliver it to your door. Big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, House Hats. Their album, Running Out of Time, is the best. Also, huge thanks to Joshua De La Renta's Fascinated, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Shed, Green Grand Green, and Dozer for all the tunes you hear throughout the show. Give them all a smash from Bandcamp, Triple J and Earth, Facey. Remember, NBA Australia supports Australian bands. But most of all, I just want to thank all of yous. Yeah, that's right. Everybody out there who's been with us either from day one or who's just jumped in. 500 fucking episodes, man. I can't believe it. Started this just in the apartment, in the tiny little study in our apartment in New York. And the fact that there's mates, there's merch, 500 episodes. I get to chat to legends like Hammer. Like, it's fucking grouse. So, you know, for all the legends who have come on the show, Paul Arnie, Carson Maddox, old mate Mad Dogs, yeah, PDX Pete, oh, man, all of yous out there, Lakers fan Tim, who have supported the show, been around, thrown questions our way, Brad McKeegan, Scotty Baxter, you guys are the fucking best. 500 episodes, man. Awesome. All right, before I tear up, bro, we'll catch us Wednesday, you dickheads. Going to finish up with the Deli Review. This is NBA Australia saying, look after yourselves, would ya? And 500 episodes! Later, hosen. Oi, 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 hey, whoa, how the fuck are you? It's Sean May Dolly over here. Oh, fuck. I figured I'd pop in for my latest pop culture review, but I've been smashing Corona tinnies all day in honour of the 500th episode of NBA Australia and my best mates LeBron and JR winning another fucking title. And I'm more shit-faced than the time we sat on the cricket oval at Maryborough High School while Plugger did fucking donuts on it. All those doughies were sick. And I'm shit-faced. So the pop culture review this week is, I don't know, don't watch Hurricane Heist if you're afraid of fucking hurricanes, because it's fucked. I don't know. Still gets 20 out of 10 in Deli ones, though, you fucks. There you go. Fuck you, Donny. Yeah, get an apartment. Yeah, anyway. All right, there you go. That's Deli for this week. Back on the tins. Yeah, woo. I'll see you next week. Later, fuckos. Deli out.